Welcome back to another installment of Bluish Podcast. I think this is episode 15. And I'm actually filming this really late. My apologies. I'm literally filming this on the day it's coming out. It's literally February 18th. And this will be posted in a couple hours. So thanks for bearing with me. I didn't have this out by midnight like I wanted to, but it's fine. Completely fine. The court situation, listen, I'm ready to be on millionaire status, okay? But last week we had my grandpa on the podcast and I was supposed to have him on again for this episode, but I decided I have to approach that situation differently because him holding the microphone is something about the psychology of that. He was being so shy, so timid, so dry, and we just don't do that at Bluish. So I will be planting a lavalier mic on him for it to feel more natural for him to tell his story because it wasn't giving high ratings. It was giving, this is going to get canceled and get pushed to the Friday night death slot. So we're going to get him back, but I got to figure out a situation to make that more conversational. After I stopped recording it, he got to yapping. Yap, yap. So I'm like, okay. We gotta approach this differently. So there's that on that. Valentine's Day was Friday. Love season. I personally love Valentine's Day, but I treat every day like Valentine's Day. Like, I know a lot of people say that every day is love's holiday, but I truly try to make that a big part of my daily life, is to always treat it like it's the loveliest day ever and there's love all around. So it was a really beautiful time. I dropped the Every Day is Love's holiday playlist. Definitely go give it a listen. It's on the Instagram and it's also on Spotify and it will be in the description. It's very throwback coded, very throwback coded. It's not your early 2000s chick flick playlist. It's not sure. It doesn't have a lot of R&B from today's time. So sorry, not sorry, but it will give you that nostalgic feeling. And nobody writes a love song the way they wrote love songs in the 70s and 80s and 60s and 50s. Back then, it was crazy. It was so crazy. You got to go listen to some Shirley Brown because she was wilding. And sometimes not in a good way. And don't get me started on Woman to Woman. The whole monologue in the beginning. Barbara, this is Shirley. I found your name and number in my man's pockets this morning. And I called to tell you that the man you're in love with, he's mine. They were so toxic back then. Like, you have to go listen. Like, it's a whole experience. Very toxic. So today I said I was going to talk about love on this podcast. So I am going to talk about all types of love and how, you know, I have a very omnistic approach to the world. Like I said, I mainly fall under Christian values, but the type of mind that I have and the openness that I have to the world allows me to see truth in different areas and in different ways and in different stories, because I am a walking contradiction. I am two truths at one time. So if I can be a manifestation of God in this life as two truths, then other things can also be true simultaneously with other truths, right? So we are going to start today with how love is mentioned in biblical text in other religions. So I've done some research. Okay, I have some research for this pod. So the Bible mentions several different types of love, okay? And each of them have very distinct and different meanings. But the one that is overarching over all of them, the number one, which is what my grandpa mentioned last pod, is agape. So agape is unconditional divine love. So this is the highest form of love. It is selfless and it is sacrificial. It is selfless. And that is such an important part to note, because to me, in our generation, the things that I am seeing people in love struggle with the most is selfishness. Everybody has been programmed to be selfish, and anything outside of just, oh, let me focus on me. It's about me. It's myself. This is what's best for me. Boom, bam. You're missing the bigger picture of what love is all about. And it is selfless and sacrificial, but it should also be mutually beneficial, right? You should be doing that for other people and they should also be doing that for you. So like I said, there's a balance that I think should be had there. So this is the highest form of love, selfless and sacrificial, exemplified by God's love for humanity. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son so that we could have eternal life. The next one is philia. I hope I'm saying that right. Philia, which is brotherly love or deep friendship. So obviously the Bible has very deep undertones of masculinity. This goes for just brotherly love, sisterly love, whatever. This love is based on mutual respect, shared values, and companionship. Example, John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. So philia is the friendship love. That's our homeboys and our honeys and our girls and our guys. That's the love that we feel with them. I have always said, one of my friends, growing up, we have always been so connected on a deeper level. And I always say she is like my soulmate or my twin flame in like a sister friend form. I can't even explain it. I'm so thankful. God literally made us for each other to be each other's like bestest, most strongest friend in this lifetime. I feel at home more with her than I do with anybody else. I am my most self with her than I am with anybody else. And I just am so thankful that I have this philia love for her and she knows who she is. I love you. We'll get her on a pod soon because she got the story. She remembers everything from our childhood that I don't. So it's going to be a good one. The next one is storge. It's literally spelled like storage, but without an A. Storge. So that is familial love. This is natural affection between parents and children, siblings, or close family members. Romans 12:10. Be devoted to one another in love. So that is your familial love. That's the, we're family. You ain't gotta like them, but you gotta love them. That's that type of love, okay? And we all know that too well. Now for me, in my life, in my family, in my legacy, in my bloodline that I'm building, we're gonna see how we approach storge, depending on how the family wants to act. How are they approaching storge? You know what I'm saying? A lot of us have trauma from our family. A lot of our biggest traumas in life and heartbreaks in life come from our family. So this storge needs some work. And then the last one is eros, which is romantic or passionate love. So the specific Greek word eros is not found in the Bible, but the concept of romantic love is present. So it's particularly present in Song of Solomon. So this is Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 2. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. My gosh. So eros, not in the Bible, but romantic love is in the Bible, of course. You know, matrimony, married, the bridegroom, all that. Okay, so those are the loves that are talked about in the Christian Bible. So it provides a well-rounded view of relationships from divine to familial to friendship and romantic connections. So my grandpa said the key to marriage was agape love, which is unconditional, selfless, and sacrificial. And I believe when both parties move with agape in their devotion to each other, then you have such a beautiful marriage. But I also feel like it can also be used as some sort of manipulation, in a sense. You're like, okay, I made these vows, we have to stay together, but he's beating you and he's emotionally abusing you. Like, he's not doing his part of agape, of being selfless and sacrificial and unconditionally loving you. And it's like, I think that we say you're supposed to unconditionally love people, and I believe that is true, but like, I can love you and choose to not entertain the behaviors that you're doing towards me that are hurting me. Now, of course, there's things that you're going to go through in relationships that are meant to strengthen you and form you. And you're supposed to go through those rough moments. You're supposed to build each other. And you're going to have those moments where you feel like, dang, he just talked to me like that, or she just talked to me like that. But the difference is, it shouldn't be a recurring pattern. It should be oh my gosh, this is new. This has not happened with us. Let's sit down and like work through this. It shouldn't be like every week he talking to you like that. Every month she tripping out on you like that. So I think when it comes to love in a marriage, in a dynamic like that, you both have to be. You got to embody Christ. And I just, it's a revelation that I had a couple weeks ago where somebody was preaching something and I was listening. And it's when you go to the, when you meet God, he's going to ask you if you knew his son. And that doesn't mean, did you know him in the sense of, okay, I believed he came to save us, but I'm still out here doing what I want to do with life. It's, did you know him to the point that you embodied Christ in your daily life? And how you interacted with people, and how you interacted with homeless, and how you interacted with your enemies, and how you interacted with that family member that hurt you. Did you embody Christ in everything you do? I've been told my whole life that I'm too nice and that I'm too whatever. It's not always in a bad tone. It's just, oh my gosh, like, how are you looking at the situation like that? It's because I truly try to move like Jesus, because I feel like that is what we are put here to do. And Jesus' main teachings are to love God and to love others. And that's it. Once you learn to remove your ego from the process of that, it is so easy to love people and not take everything so personally. Yes, forgive, forget, move on. We're all living the same human experience and we're all flawed. Holding anybody to anything is crazy. That is God's job. That is not our job. You holding somebody to something, you holding on to bitterness is doing the exact opposite of what God put his son here to teach us to do. So as you move on through this season and you're meditating on love and stuff, I really want you to think about that. You're going to look what others would call, people moving with their ego would call weak or too nice or this, that, and the third. You don't need to be concerned with the sheep. You don't need to be concerned with the programmed. You don't need to be concerned with the happenings of the matrix. You just do what you and God talk about doing that works for you and your story and what he sent his son here to teach us, which is to embody Christ. Because when we embody Christ and we meet God, he asks, did you know my son? He'll be like, yeah, I did. I embodied him daily. The best that I could. Now, was I flawed? Was I imperfect? Yes, because you made us like that in this human experience, because that's how we learn lessons. By no means do I want you to strive for perfection in love. But I want you to strive for always being willing to be better and do better and to love better and to embody Christ. So I'm going to move on to the next one. So the Quran, we're going to talk about what love, how love is mentioned in the Quran. So it speaks extensively about love in its various forms. It doesn't categorize love into the same specific types like the Greek distinctions in the Bible, but the Islamic teachings highlight different dimensions of love. So particularly focusing on love for Allah, love for others, and love within relationships. Keep that in your mind. It's very similar to the main teachings in the Bible, right? The Quran emphasizes that the greatest form of love is love for Allah, which should be above all else. So please forgive me if I am saying these wrong. So this verse is Surah Al-Baqarah, chapter 2, verse 165. Yet there are some who take others as Allah's equal. They love them as they should love Allah, but those who believe love Allah even more. But those who believe love Allah even more. This is shown through worship, obedience, and devotion. So number two is Allah's love for people. The Quran describes the people whom Allah loves, such as the righteous, patient, and just. So Surah Al-Imran, chapter 3, verses 31. Say, if you love Allah, then follow me, so Allah will love you and forgive your sins. And Allah is forgiving and merciful. Surah Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 54. Allah will bring forth, in place of them, a people he will love and who will love him. The third one is love between people, so family, friendship, and marriage. So marital love is described and... So marital love. So the Quran describes love and mercy as foundations of marriage. Love and mercy as foundations of marriage. That's very similar. It's very similar to something we talked about within agape and eros and all of that. So Surah Ar-Rum, chapter 30, verse 21. And among his signs is that he created for you spouses from among yourselves so that you may find tranquility in them. And he placed between you affection and mercy. And they call affection mawada. That's 3 D's? 2 D's. Oh, Lord. Placed between you. So it's called mawada. Affection is mawada. And mercy is rahma. So affection and mercy is what you should find with your spouse in Islam, is in Islamic tradition. Then the next one is parental love. So kindness and respect towards parents are strongly emphasized. So Surah Al-Isra, chapter 17, verse 23. Be good to your parents. If one or both of them reach old age in your care, never say to them even nor yell at them, but speak to them a noble word. Okay, respect your elders. It's the type of love they're talking about. So number 4 is conditional and forbidden love. The Quran warns against misplaced love, such as excessive love for wealth, status, or sinful desires. Surah Al-Kahf, chapter 18, verse 46. Wealth and children are adornment of the worldly life, but the enduring good deeds are better to your Lord for reward and better for one's hope. Love for injustice, wrongdoing, or oppressors is condemned. And number 5, universal compassion and brotherhood. The Quran promotes love for humanity, emphasizing kindness, justice, and compassion. Surah Al-Hujurat, chapter 49, verse 10. The believers are but brothers, so make peace between your brothers and fear Allah that you may receive mercy. Wow. So, in conclusion, the Quran doesn't categorize love into specific categories, but it speaks about divine love for and from Allah and love in relationships, so family, marriage, and friendship, and misplaced love, worldly attachment, sin, or injustice. I think it is so interesting how we see these commonalities in different spiritual texts. And it's very interesting. They all speak about love in pretty much the same ways, at least the overarching concept of love, right? I don't know the ins and outs of the Quran. I can't quote much else from it, but from this research I did, but it seems pretty interesting. So next we're gonna go to the Torah. This is the quote unquote Jewish text, Jewish Bible. So it speaks about love, which is known as Ahava. And in various contexts, it emphasizes love for God, family, community, and righteousness. So the Torah focuses more on actions and responsibilities. You know, Orthodox Jews and even just Jews that aren't as religious, they have the most laws and things they have to follow more than any other religion in the world. They are truly an action-based religion. Like, they believe in their actions showing for their love for God. So number 1, love for God, Ahavat Hashem. So the Torah commands deep love and devotion to God. We see another similarity. Love God, first commandment in Christianity. They talked about it in the Quran, love for Allah, Hub Allah. And now we have love for God again in the Torah, Ahavat Hashem. So in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. This is part of the Shema, the central Jewish prayer. So love for God is demonstrated through obedience to his commandments. So that's what I said. Jewish people are a people of action. They're going to show God just how much they love him. So number 2 is God's love for people. So his people, Israel, is technically his people in the Torah. And this is a covenantal love, based on commitment rather than merit. So in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 7 through 8, chapter 7, verses 7 through 8, it was not because you were more numerous than all the peoples that the Lord favored and chose you, for you were the fewest of all peoples, but it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath he swore to your ancestors. God's love is often expressed through protection, provision, and guidance. Love for others, ahavat haraya. Oh, I hope I said that right, Lord. The Torah places great importance on love for fellow humans. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. Love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. This is the foundational principle in Judaism and is later reaffirmed by Jesus in the New Testament. Didn't I say that? Love God and love others. Hey, if you're doing that, then you are on the right path. I promise you. Okay? So this is expressed through kindness, justice, honesty, and charity. So then we have parental and familial love. The Torah speaks of the love between parents and children as part of honoring family relationships. So in Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, honor your father and your mother so that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Love within families is shown through care, obedience, and respect. Now, God, you have to help this generation break some of these generational oppressions and curses within their bloodline for us to really tap in with this. Because there's a disconnect right now. The familial love part is so tough sometimes. And sometimes it paralyzes us. Sometimes we take our family's word too deep and it moves the trajectory of our life. Sometimes we don't listen to our family enough. Sometimes it's just, there's a disconnect. You know, families as a whole have to do better at loving each other and accepting each other far better than they have been doing. There should not be this much separation and trauma within families. And it's truly so sad. And I pray that God is doing a work in all the people that he's chosen to do this work in trying to mend these familial bonds. So we have marital love, love between husband and wife. It is emphasized as a sacred bond. So Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. I love this verse, and there's a lot of, I always see people talking about this verse, how you'll meet like a mama's boy or like a girl or whatever, and they have so much conflict between the mother and the wife. And they always bring up this verse. Because when you get married, your wife trumps everybody. Your mama, your daddy, the kids. Your wife is above all else. And a lot of mamas have an issue with that. I have seen it time and time again. And I get it. I mean, maybe I don't have a son yet. But I get why they would act finicky like that. Like, I get it, but hey, that's who he chose to be his bride. You're gonna have to get over it and let him handle his life the way he wanna handle his life. And vice versa. I know there have been. There are some dads out there that have been displeased with the men that their daughters have chosen, for sure. But, golly. Anyway, so the Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim, oh my gosh, where's my sister when I need her? Is often interpreted as an allegory of God's love for Israel, but it also celebrates romantic love for the stranger. Ahavat hager. Oh Lord, Tali. I'm so sorry if I'm saying this wrong. As a half Jewish woman, I should know better. Anyway, the Torah repeatedly commands kindness and love toward foreigners and outsiders. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 34. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. Hello. This reflects the universal aspect of love and justice in Judaism. Everybody should get a free piece of land, in my opinion. Why are we paying for land? Why are we, you know how much, they tell us that it's a scarcity thing going on in the world. It's not enough farmland. It's not enough voodoo. They're lying. There's enough land to go around for everybody. Listen, go read the Old Testament and see how God feels about borders. Okay? God don't like a border. You see what God did to Egypt in the Old Testament? Plagued. That's why we have Passover, because he killed all them newborn sons, them firstborn sons. He had to put blood on the doorway so that the death would pass over your house. That's why we have Passover. That's why we eat lamb. Anyway, God don't play about borders. Anywho, So, love expressed through righteousness. Love in the Torah is not just an emotion, but is demonstrated through justice, mercy, and humility. I think it's interesting that mercy was talked about in the Torah and the Quran. It was mentioned quite a bit. And mercy is, gosh, that's such a big one. We should be showing more mercy than we have been showing people, I think. We don't give people enough chances, and I think it's so unfair because we're all, like I said, I say all the time, we're all living a human experience with so much error. And if we're not giving people mercy, how are they learning? If we're just icing them out, giving them a cold shoulder, not letting God come in and work and let you be an angel in their life by giving them mercy, what are we doing? Now, of course, now when the pattern gets to get in, you know, a little demonic, then okay, maybe I didn't give you enough mercy. I'm still forgive you, you know what? But I think, you know what? We need to reevaluate how this mercy is being given. So Micah chapter 6, verse 8. He has told you, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. In conclusion, in the Torah, love is primarily seen as a commitment and responsibility, obligation, rather than just a feeling. So it's seen as a commitment and a responsibility rather than just a feeling. Hopefully it's a little balance, because we done seen some relationships where they felt like they're just obligated to be there and they just so unhappy. Lord, help them. Love for God, love God's love for humanity, love for others, and love in relationships. So now we're going to talk a little bit about Buddhism. So in Buddhism, love is understood as a deeply transformative and selfless force, distinct from attachment or craving. Unlike the Western concept of romantic love, Buddhist teachings emphasize compassion, loving kindness, and equanimity. The most well-known framework for love in Buddhism comes from the four immeasurable qualities, the Brahmaviharas. Oh, Lord, I hope I said that right. So loving kindness, metta, unconditional love and goodwill towards all beings. Why is you squashing a bug when it's outside in its own elements? That's demonic. Unlike possessive love, metta is selfless and free from attachment. Practicing metta involves wishing happiness, peace, and freedom from suffering from oneself and others. That's powerful. So, for example, the Metta Sutta, loving kindness discourse, encourages developing boundless love. Just as a mother would protect her only child with her life, even so let one cultivate a boundless heart towards all beings. I love that. Compassion, karuna, empathetic love that moves one to relieve the suffering of others. This is the love of a bodhisattva. Ooh, Jesus. Someone who seeks enlightenment, not just for themselves, but for all beings. For example, the Dalai Lama often teaches about karuna as a foundation of ethical action. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. Appreciative joy, mudita. Selfless love in the happiness of others without jealousy or comparison. The opposite of envy, it allows us to rejoice in others' success and well-being. Example, in meditation, Buddhists practice mudita by wishing joy upon others just as they would for themselves. Okay, Buddhism concepts. I'm going to have to dive deeper into this because I feel like I do a lot of this already unconsciously, like just with God putting it on my own heart. So that's really interesting. Equanimity, so upekkha. So it's unbiased, unconditional love that remains steady regardless of circumstances. True love in Buddhism is not possessive or conditional. It allows people to be free. So, for example, a Buddhist might express upekkha by accepting change in relationships without clinging.
Ciao. That's some strength. That is some strength.
You know, they talk about the art of detachment so much in today's time. And baby, depending on how you were raised and what you went through in your childhood or whatever, practicing detachment can be so difficult. To love somebody and to still detach yourself is so selfless and so tough sometimes. So that is
It's a muscle that we all probably need to work on, is the unconditional love aspect and what that looks like and how to move like that without feeling immense pain and let downness and stuff. So we'll talk about this. We'll have to talk about this more in another episode. So romantic and attachment based love. And so romantic and attachment based love in Buddhism. So it does not reject romantic love, but it warns against clinging, desire, and attachment, which can cause suffering. Jesus, Mary, Joseph. So, for example, the Buddha taught that attachment leads to suffering because all things are impermanent. Jesus. The idea is to love without attachment, allowing freedom and respect. It's so hard sometimes, though, isn't it, guys? It is so hard. It is so hard. Maybe it's just a little hard for me. I mean, it obviously ain't hard for everybody because people out here doing it. But golly, this is why they say you have to be, your person has to come in and enhance your life. You cannot depend on your person to make your life the life that you want it to be. You have to already be enough for yourself. And I think that is the key to what they are saying about this practice. You have to be enough within yourself, and your person comes in and they just enhance your life, and they just, you guys enhance each other's life. But without each other, you're still doing the thing, you know? But oh my goodness, Lord. So love and practice, metta meditation. One of the most famous Buddhist practices is metta bhavana, loving kindness meditation. So you say, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. And then you say to a loved one, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. Then you say to a neutral person, someone you don't know, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. And then someone you struggle with, you say, may they be happy, may they be free from suffering. Then you extend it to all beings. May all beings be happy and free from suffering. Love it. So Buddhism love is selfless, unconditional, and based on wisdom and compassion. It is strays away from attachment-based love, you know? I feel like the other ones talked about kind of being attached in different ways, but this one is, hey, you love them regardless, period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Which I guess they talk about the unconditional love, ahava, agape, all of that. But in a sense, there was still a little attachment undertone in those, you know? This one's, hey, genuine care for others without clinging. Okay. So, which one is it? Okay, then this one is Hinduism. So number one, divine love, bhakti. Devotional love for God. That is the number one out of all of these. Devotional love for God is the central concept in Hinduism. Bhakti is seen as a path to enlightenment where one surrenders to the divine with pure love. So for example, the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, verses 6 through 7. I'm saying this like it's a biblical thing. I hope I'm even saying that right. Because we say chapter, verse 12, chapter, you know. Those who dedicate all their actions to me, regarding me as the supreme goal, and who worship me with love and devotion, I swiftly rescue them from the cycle of birth and death. Oh, my Lord. Different forms of bhakti, aka devotional love, madhura bhava, love for God as a beloved. For example, I guess that God would be Krishna. So in Hinduism, I believe they have multiple gods. Sorry, I didn't research that deeper. Vatsalya bhava, love for God as a parent. So that would be Yashoda or in baby Krishna. Maybe that. Okay. Dasya bhava, love as a servant of God. So Hanuman's devotion to Rama. Sakya bhava, love as a friend. So Arjuna and Krishna. I wish my sister was here again because she knows about all this too. So then you have romantic and sensual love, kama. And this reminds me of, Kama Sutra. Yep. So kama refers to desire, passion, and romantic love. It is not seen as sinful, but as a natural aspect of life when balanced with dharma, which is righteousness. The Kama Sutra explores love, relationships, and intimacy, but always within the framework of respect and harmony. So the love between Radha and Krishna represents both romantic longing and spiritual devotion. So those are their two of their gods. Speaking of Kama Sutra, Ben and Jerry's, stock my caramel sutra in Oklahoma. I have not been able to find it in Oklahoma for years. It's the best flavor y'all got. Anyway, familial and friendly love, Prema and Maitri. Lord, I know I'm saying these wrong. So Prema, deep selfless love, often referring to pure love without expectations. Ding, another similarity. Maitri, love in form of friendship and goodwill. Ding, another similarity. The bond between Rama and Lakshmana in the Ramayana represents unwavering brotherly love. Universal love and compassion. Karuna means compassionate love, similar to Buddhist karuna. It is a love that motivates helping others and reducing suffering. Example, Lord Shiva's compassion for humanity and always guiding and protecting devotees. And number five, selfless unconditional love, Atma Prema, love for the divine within oneself. Hinduism teaches that true love comes from recognizing the divine within all beings. For example, the Advaita Vedanta philosophy teaches that all love ultimately leads to realizing oneness with Brahman, the supreme reality. So in conclusion, Hinduism teaches that love exists at different levels, from romantic and familial love to divine and universal compassion. The ultimate love is bhakti, devotion to God, and Atma Prema. I'm saying that like it's Spanish. Atma Prema, self-realization leading to spiritual liberation. So those are the religions that I chose to focus on. And if you made it to the end of this, thank you. But do you see the pattern? Do you see the overarching concept that is prominent in all religious texts? Love God. Love others. Have compassion for others. Unconditional love for your partner. Charity. It's in all religious texts. So what I want to leave with you today in regards to love, and if you're struggling with religion or your relationship to God, when you balance all these truths and you look around you at the world, it is plain to see that love is what sets everybody free. So if you can't do anything else on your journey, if you don't know which way to go right now, what to believe, what not to be, what to believe and what not to believe, the best thing you can do is to love. Love others, love God, love yourself, have compassion, have forgiveness, and seek it out. Start, you know, researching love on a deeper level. Get into some books, stop all that scrolling. The thing with social media is like it can be such a great tool, but if all you're doing is scrolling, you're becoming aware, but you're not putting action behind it. You done saved all these damn posts. You ain't read not one of them since you saved them. Put the phone down and get into actually diving deeper into these subjects, okay? Get you a book, go to the library. If you own a home in Oklahoma, you pay to use the library. Did you know that? I was looking at my property taxes. I said, I've been paying this much to the library. I'm fixed to be in there, taking advantage. Get in that library. Go talk to your elders. That post that you saved, okay, save it, read it, go research it. Go dive deeper. You know what I'm saying? You're constantly consuming information and your brain is just frenzy. So instead of just being aware, put some action behind that awareness, okay? So that's what I have for you about love today. And I hope if this year's Valentine's was not fulfilling for you, or if you felt sad, or, you know, we're going through grief, darkness, whatever, I pray that the next one is just better. And I pray that you have days that feel like Valentine's Day, so many throughout the year, throughout all the years. I pray that you just feel like every day becomes Valentine's Day in your life. And everything is for a season. It's not forever, okay? Even if you've had back-to-back bad Valentine's Days, you keep believing in better. Because if you believe in suffering, if you believe that this is going to be your story forever, your mind is going to create that reality. You believe in better. You always believe that better is coming for you, even during your darkest moments. And I promise you, it always gets better. Now, I want to talk a little bit about a movie that I saw a few weeks ago. It's called Mona Lisa Smile. It's an older movie, and it's all about feminism. And I loved how it balanced feminism. Because for me, the way I want to be a woman in this world may look a little different than what modern women are used to. I want to be like a really big balance between what an old-fashioned woman looks like and a modern woman. That's just me being biracial again. I believe two truths can exist at one time. And like I said, the biggest part of feminism is doing what you want to do as a woman and not feeling pressured to do anything different than what you feel like you should be doing as a woman. For that works for you. And I love that Joan in Mona Lisa Smile, it was like women were going to college at this point. I don't want to spoil it. So, okay, spoiler alert. If you're going to go watch a movie, maybe skip this part. If you don't care, whatever. I'm not going to give you that much detail. But basically, all these women are going to this college and they're all basically going knowing that they're going to get married. It's just they're just going to have this degree under their belt and they're going to go home and be a wife and raise kids and be a housewife, have dinner ready at the table at 5 p.m. So there's women that are like rebelling against that too. They're like, no, I want to go get my master's degree. I'm going to be a journalist. Like, no. And I can be married and do both, whatever. And then there's this part in the movie where the professor, who's Julia Roberts, she's talking to Joan, and Joan is like the smartest girl in the class. Like, she was going to go to Yale after she graduated from this college. I forgot the name. And she decided to get married and follow her husband to his next journey, wherever he was going to get his master's. And the teacher's, what are you doing? Like, you got into Yale. You're like one of the only women to ever get into Yale so far. She's like, this is the life that I want to live. Like, I want to be a wife. I want to have kids. I want to have dinner ready at the table at 5 p.m. And that's okay. And I was like, girl, yes. But then you have the other women in the story that are like, they left their husband to go work this life. And it's yes. Do what you need to do as a woman, no matter what that looks like. Do not feel like you have to be pressured to go either way. Do what works for you and your husband, your spouse, whatever is going on in your life. You do that. You don't care what anybody else got to say about it. Anyway, great movie. Mona Lisa Smile. Okay, page 64 of The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. He's basically saying everything I just compared between the religions. They all had a prophet. They all had a God. Heaven and hell, you know? It's a lot of truth going on. Okay. And one of the elders of the city said, speak to us of good and evil. And he answered, of the good in you I can speak, but not of the evil. For what is evil but good tortured by its own hunger and thirst? Oh my gosh. Verily, when good is hungry, it seeks food even in dark caves. And when it thirsts, it drinks even of dead waters. You are good when you are one with yourself. Yet when you are not one with yourself, you are not evil. For a divided house is not a den of thieves. It is only a divided house. And a ship without rudder may wander aimlessly among perilous isles, yet sink not to the bottom. You are good when you strive to give of yourself, yet you are not evil when you seek gain for yourself. For when you strive for gain, you are but a root that clings to the earth and sucks at her breast. Surely the fruit cannot say to the root, be like me, ripe and full and ever giving of your abundance. For to the fruit giving is a need, and receiving is a need to the root. You are good when you are fully awake in your speech, yet you are not evil when you sleep while your tongue staggers without purpose. And even stumbling speech may strengthen a weak tongue. You are good when you walk to your goal firmly and with bold steps, yet you are not evil when you go thither limping. Even those who limp go not backward. But you who are strong and swift, see that you do not limp before the lame, deeming it kindness. Wow. I read two pages. Oops. But you get the gist. That's deep. For what is evil but good tortured by its own hunger and thirst? I always say that about trauma and like darkness. It is just people being so hurt. They don't know what to do with it. It's so sad. Verily, when good is hungry, it seeks food even in dark caves. And when it thirsts, it drinks even of dead waters. Oh my gosh. That's why you see people with abandonment wounds in the situations they're in. That's why you see people who have struggled with things go into addiction and go into just, they want anything to numb. They want anything to get rid of that darkness. That is so deep. You are good when you are one with yourself. Yet when you are not one with yourself, you are not evil. You're just learning. You're figuring life out. Anyway, that was page 64 and 65 of The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And one last thing. Speaking of Sleeping Beauty, Bath and Body Works done released a Disney Princesses line. Thank God Princess Tiana's in there. They have once again left out Princess Aurora, Briar Rose, Sleeping Beauty. They always leave my good sis out. And I'm sick of it. They could have literally had a rose-scented collection. And the blue and pink, come on. Anyway, it's a cute little collection, though. Bath and Body's, read the ingredients. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe just get you a little hand sanitizer. But it's a very cute collection. I love anything Disney Princess. It's very nostalgic. But yeah, they left my good sis out once again. So I just want you to meditate in your journal about the type of loves that we talked about and how you can incorporate those into your life and where you've fallen short on those loves and maybe where you've done really well with those loves. Ask yourself questions in these journals. What do I believe about love? What do I believe about unconditional love? I don't even know if I like that. You know, meditate on those things in your journal. And I will see you guys next week for another installment of Bluish Podcast. I love you guys so, so, so much. You keep going. Worry is a prayer alarm. Take it to God. You keep working out you and God's story because it's unfolding in a beautiful way, even through the darkness. Okay, have a good week.